Blog Talk Radio.
We are the heirs of that first revolution.
Will a strong and united America still be a force for freedom and prosperity around the world?
America has created the longest peacetime economic expansion in our history.
We are the heirs of that first revolution.
Good common sense and sound judgment of the American people and their essential love of justice.
Hi, welcome to the Kudzu Vine for February 24th, 2013. I'm your host, David McLaughlin. Joining me as always, welcome Catherine Smith.
Hello.
And welcome Tim
Slightly
Shipley.
Distracted tonight by the red carpet, I'm just saying.
Yeah, this is a big night for Catherine, and good evening, sir.
Yes, well, and you know, if the Oscars started at 7, we might have to do our show a little different. But since it starts at 8,
no, it
right
starts at
it.
2. The Oscars start at
well,
2.
Well, is that Pacific time? Or well, we're going to have a little Oscar talk. President Carter actually talked about the movie Argo, and we're going to get into that later as a little Oscar preview topic. And we're going to have a lot of Georgia topics, including one topic that will be our first one. That's going to be a little us discussing it before we have a guest next week who's one of the promoters of this bill to essentially repeal the 17th Amendment of the Constitution. And for folks that are like, now, which one's that? Is that the one to ban alcohol, the one to bring it back? Is that, you know, which one's that? This is the one that called for direct election of senators. Now, I'm sure a lot of people were thinking, hey, I didn't know that was a problem. I thought we voted for senators like I voted for Congress and state rep and state house and governor and everything else, and that was a good thing. You know, we decided that back 80-some-odd years ago. I'm actually not sure exactly when that one was put in, but it's been a while.
It's been 100 years
ago. So it's been working for, well, I thought it was working for 100 years. I thought, you know, more direct democracy was a good thing. But there's a whole cadre, if you will, of state reps in Georgia, one of them being Buzz Brockway, who's been on the show before, who's agreed to come back on again. But there's, it's a number of them. They're not all in one part of the state, but they are all Republican. And some people have postulated that they saw the polling done by both Harper Polling and Public Policy Polling. And one of those was alluded to last week by our guest, Tom Jensen. And they saw that polling that Max Cleland was running quite strong and other Democrats were running, you know, pretty strong as well. And because of that, that the people of Georgia, which is considered a reliably red state, may no longer be trusted. Tim, is it that simple or is there more than that?
No, I think it's a great deal more than that. I think, for instance, in this state at least, you know, they've been a little iffy with Senator Chambliss and Isaacson over things like, working in groups with Democrats to work on things like immigration reform and things like that. And, you know, a lot of the party faithful were just, as y'all recall, not happy about that in the least. Might be one of the reasons Chambliss is quitting is he sees the handwriting on the wall. Secondly, I've seen some rumblings about this come from conservative quarters in other states. So Georgia is not the only state where, you know, conservative members of the Republican Party are kicking this idea around. Now, the reason this was changed to start with, you can imagine the corruption that developed when senators were appointed by state legislatures and in some states, the governor. essentially, what happened was the thing got for sale to the highest bidder. People like the back in the Gilded Age, the richest people, the railroads, people like that were going around to different states just buying up those Senate seats. Our party bosses, you know, like in the state of New York with Tammany Hall, were, you know, basically pushing the appointment of certain people. So that's why we went to the direct election of senators to start with, I'm not real sure what we would serve by going back the other way.
Well, you could, Tim, you're right to bring that up as part of the progressive reforms. And if you go back, you could see, some vote buying, if you will. And we know we hate the influence of lobbyists. This could easily bring that type of behavior into another aspect of our government. And really, lobbyists aren't, you know, there's not a lot of fans of lobbyists on the left or the right at times. Catherine, do you see it as just a power grab by Republicans to keep control, or is there some greater good here that I'm missing?
Well, I think there's a lot of talk these days. Like I hear, I don't listen as much to talk radio as I used to, but from time to time I tune in, and Rush Limbaugh and Sean Hannity are constantly talking about how people are not smart enough to vote. That I heard someone say, it was a caller say that you should have to take a test to be able to vote. So I think that there's this idea that, you know, we're not smart enough to vote, and I think that that's part of this. But I also think, I mean, I think they're never going to say that, but I think that's, you know, sort of a meme that is floating around that, you know, who are these people? And, you know, basically they say anybody who voted for President Obama was an idiot, you know. They don't know what they're doing. They have. So.
Yeah.
Catherine, I think that's
you're right to bring up the talk radio thing, because we've been talking about this for about 5 years now, you know, right after the, you know, president's election the first time. Talk radio is kind of driving the Republican train, and it's driving it off the cliff. And here, it, you know, it's good for them, for their fan base and their ratings, and then, of course, their advertisers that they get their little club of, you know, buy gold or whatever. If they can make their listeners think, oh, yeah, we're the smart people, the 10 million people that listen to Rush Limbaugh, the 8 million that listen to Sean Hannity. I don't know what the exact numbers are. It may be higher than that, but it's still a very, you know, really small slice of the American electorate. If they can make their people feel smart, and this happens in things outside of politics. You know, Jim Rome has the jungle and his little group of people that listen to his way of thinking about sports. Whatever it is, it's good for them. Now you've got elected representatives, you know, falling in line with this type of thinking, and it's going to continue to plague them. There's other polls out nationally that shows that the presidents have never been more popular, and the Republicans have never been more unpopular, and this is just one more little, move that's getting them there. Tim?
Well, I've got another angle here I've been thinking about. Now you know, with redistricting, over 90% of our representatives down to the legislative level are in very safe districts, which means what they've got to do is keep their base happy. Because if any attack's going to come at them, it's going to come at them from their own party, mostly from their right. And so perhaps this is a movement to appease their base because of this thing right here. Repealing the 17th Amendment would take the vote of 2/3 of the members of each House of Congress, followed by ratification by 3/4 of the state. It's not going to happen.
No.
It's not going to happen. And the voters overall in this country would not be supporting giving up their right to directly elect U.S. senators. So what are we left with? Perhaps it is simply a form of appeasement to their respective bases. What about that, David?
Isn't this a major waste of time then?
Absolutely.
I mean, a lot of conservatives say we're wasting our time. They can either do one or two things. Go ahead, Tim.
But I was, but not when it refers to their own electability, which is, to be honest, the first thing 99% of politicians in this country think about. How am I going to get reelected? Well, the first thing you got to do is anchor down your base. And so you got to throw them some bones.
I don't see right. how they consider this a bone. Either let's just go the other way. If somebody came to you and said, Tim, Catherine, it's 100% lock that a Democrat will win the Georgia Senate seat, in U.S. Senate seat in 2014, but you don't get to vote on them. A group of, 100 insiders in the Democratic Party get to pick that person. I wouldn't feel good about that, would y'all?
No. No.
Then why do these rank-and-file Republicans that are in these districts like this? I don't think they do. Two, another point is we talk about this as a waste of time. A lot of conservatives are even more, on the bandwagon than we are on the left about don't waste our time. This is a huge waste of time. If you know the thing's going nowhere, if we're not moving back 101 years back in the past, and repealing the 17th Amendment, why don't you get on to what you consider a better and bigger issue for the state of Georgia?
Did you notice they did not submit a bill, but a resolution? What they're requesting, a resolution, a House resolution calling for repeal of the 17th Amendment. Not a bill to pass a law. That'd be unconstitutional. But a resolution. And by making that statement, they appeal to a certain base of people who will be very happy and vote for them. That's the only thing I can come up with.
Base for this. Catherine, who are these people that don't trust themselves?
It's not that they don't trust themselves. They don't trust everyone else. But they trust that it's a way, it gives them confidence in their elected officials who are Republicans who are sponsoring this bill, because they don't trust the rest of us, and they think that Democrats have have more opportunities going forward because the president is so popular, because they feel like with the increase in Latino vote, the increase in African American vote, the increase in young voters, they see their fortunes fading. And so that's what I think.
But eventually you have to, win with ideas. I mean, you have to have people believe like you do, and you have to influence them to think like you do and to say you're not smart enough. I don't know who that is. That's got to be a turn on too.
But that's not what they're saying. They're not saying you're not smart enough. They're saying they're not smart enough. We're all smart enough, but we got to stop those other people, those dumb people, from being able to vote.
Blame others, if you will.
David, those six men have an angle. I've never met a politician that didn't have an angle. And there's an angle that I have yet to think of. I'm pretty confident that Buzz is going to provide us with those answers to what we haven't thought of. You see what I'm saying?
He's going to give us his spin. I mean,
Isn't a spin an angle?
And here's the guy that came up with the thing, Kevin Cook. He actually on his issues page, one of the things he talks about is the 10th Amendment. He actually says, our federal government has overstepped its constitutional authority time and time again for 100 years. It's funny he mentions this. Maybe this guy's like, this Kevin Cook is really, really into the repeal of the 17th Amendment. I don't know.
It ain't just that one.
Sponsor of it.
I blogged on a conservative blog. Conservatives all over the country And repealing not only this amendment, but the amendment establishing the income tax, it is gaining a little bit of footing in conservative circles. That's all I'm saying. They're giving this a look. I'm not sure that either will go anywhere other than a few scattered resolutions in state legislatures, but I'm just saying it is not just in Georgia that this is being talked about.
That's true. Yeah, it's
Oh yeah. I mean, I think, of course, with the income tax, you know that conservatives hate the income tax. So
right.
That's definitely one they've probably been, you know, wanting to get after for a long time.
But when they mention that one, they mention this one, too, or most that I have talked to online about it. They mention both of them.
Is it just me? Or is there probably some conservative, not the majority, not even probably the overwhelming majority, but some percentage of conservatives out there that would have the U.S. Constitution consist of the Second Amendment and that be it? You know, probably restrict free speech at some point, you know, obviously things like direct election of senators, you know, all the amendments that passed after.
They have made the statement, how should I put it, that they want to get as close to what James Madison originally wrote as possible. That's not to say they want to do away with every amendment to the Constitution. That's just what they say when asked about this. They want to get as close to the spirit of the original Constitution as possible. Of course, I can do math too, David. I can look around the country and see how many legislatures right now are controlled by Republicans. Well, guess what would happen? The good old U.S. Senate would flip. Gee, I guess they haven't thought about that, have they? Why, of course not. It could be as simple as math. You know what I mean?
Yeah. But, of course, it's just a short-term plan. And I think if some of this stuff were to pass, it would make them even more unpopular. And then they would start to lose some of those state majorities that they might have right now, and put them further behind. Because they have a huge, huge image problem. I don't know how many stories I saw this week that talked about the GOP's image problem and how they can fix it.
Yeah. But do you think it would be interesting to know what the majority of voters in these respective districts of these gentlemen actually think about this, or do they even know? I mean,
you couldn't poll it 17th Amendment. You'd have to poll it, do you want the right to directly elect your senators? And I think if you worded it that way, it would be, you know, jaw-dropping. It'd be like the Guam question we may mention later in the Harper polling poll. I mean, it would be that one-sided. I guess there's some way you could word it a little differently and maybe get it 75-25. But I just don't think the American public, conservative or liberal, wants their rights restricted. I just don't see it. Well, but we'll talk more about it with Buzz Brockway, and who knows, he's got a week. Maybe in the week he may even change his mind a little bit because, you know, everybody has that right.
I'm looking forward to Buzz. He's always been an excellent guest, and he'll give us some good stuff. So tune in next week, folks.
Yes, well, we mentioned these polls, and, of course, last week Tom Jensen previewed some numbers for us, and then Harper Polling, Brock over McCleary over there, he did a poll on Georgia. And I even heard that Landmark Communications did one, but I never could find the numbers on it. But for starters, I wanted to talk about the governor's race because we obviously, I think last week Tom Jensen alluded to it, the fact that Max Cleland in particular was going to run closer in that race. But in the governor's race, Governor Deal's approval numbers are in the 30s on both polls. Other polls have been done showing that he's not even, you know, above 40%. Yet when they actually test him in races against real names, he wins by handily margins. He doesn't quite get to 50, which, of course, people could say that's encouraging, but against some opponents, I think he was as high as 48. That's margin of error. that's run a few ads, you can get those 2 points. Catherine, why, if he's this unpopular approval rating-wise, is he not at least have more people in the undecided column?
I think there's a couple things. I think, you know, he's the sitting governor, and even though people don't like him, and I think the names that they floated are either not very well known or not very well liked. I mean, John Barrow, you know.
Well, he's just not very well known outside of his district. In his district, he does quite well. I mean, there's no doubt that he does well in his district.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then, you know, Kasim Reed, Mayor Reed, I think, is, you know, popular in Atlanta. And he did have the interesting thing, the most interesting one is Mayor Reed, because his approval rating, I was just looking at this.
Kasim Reed's approval rating in this poll was 32%. This is not Atlanta, this is Georgia. 32% favorable, I guess it's favorability rating, 25% unfavorable, 43% not sure. So
those are
right
people that don't
up.
Live in Atlanta.
That's statewide. I mean, some Atlanta, some not. But then Governor Deal was upside down. 36% approve, 41% disapprove. And I know favorability and approval is a little bit nuanced, although they seem to run close to each other.
But I think it's interesting that Deal shored up those numbers against Reed in a potential governor's race.
Had a 10-point lead. He had an 8-point lead against Jason Carter. Jason Carter, who actually Jason Carter did better than John Barrow. John Barrow's numbers completely mirrored Kasim Reed. A 10-point divide, if you will. I don't know. Maybe that's the Carter name that helps. I mean, maybe more people have heard Jason Carter and see what we see in him, but he actually ran a little closer than Mayor Reed and Congressman Barrow, for what it's worth. Tim, what do you make of these numbers, the contrast?
You know, I really think Catherine said it right a couple of weeks back. Right now, whether we want to admit it or not, this is still a pretty red state. And I don't think we're looking at Georgia as a battleground in statewide races until, you know, maybe the 2018 cycle or 2020, as our friend Charlie came on here and said. And right now, as Catherine also said, you know, the governor has that R behind his name. And right now in this state, that's how you get elected. Democrats have not won a statewide race in 13 years in Georgia. You know, there ain't no getting around it. He's the Republican. If he's the Republican nominee, he's going to be favored to win simply for that reason, mainly. Right?
Well, you would think that. I will tell you the most interesting number in this whole thing. We didn't get to the presidential stuff, the Falcon Stadium, any of that stuff. Question 22. Now, we know demographics is huge. It said press 1 if you're white, press 2 if you're African-American, press 3 if you're other. Only the 3 choices.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we know the voting population in this state in, like, say, 2012, was somewhere around 67%. Was that correct? Tell me if I'm
right. About 65, somewhere along in there, yeah.
65. The number of people in this poll that showed Max Cleland winning, that showed Hillary Clinton beating all comers, that showed Nathan Deal's approval rating at 38%, it showed that 73% of the respondents were white, 20% were African-American. We know at some point it looked like the African-American electorate in Georgia this past time was around 30. these numbers are favorable to Republicans demographically, and they're getting killed.
Maybe it's more of a split reflecting the 2010 electorate, those who actually voted. I mean, wouldn't you want to look at 2010 in relation to 2014 instead of 2012? You see what I'm saying?
I agree with you, Tim. I agree. I'm not saying he took the sample was wrong. The sample probably was still, I mean, this is what I like. If you saw these numbers and they showed Republicans winning everything, then we could say, oh, well, it's two-weighted Republican. He weighted the sample two Republican. Now, we can agree or disagree about how much based on which year it is, but it still didn't turn out good for him. Every single opponent they put Hillary Clinton up, be it Marco Rubio, Paul Ryan, not the V team, she's winning. Nathan Deal, under 40%.
We're not talking about the party here. We're talking about the magic name. We're talking about Clinton. That name was magic even in this state. The first state that came in for Bill Clinton on election night in 1992 was the state of Georgia. That's the first state that lit up. And he darn near carried the state again in 1996, even after some of the stuff that had happened with the crime bill and, you know, different things. NAFTA and stuff like that, he almost still won the state again. The Clintons are well-liked in Georgia. So I don't think we can, you know, go by that.
I think this bodes well. I really do. I know that Hillary Clinton has more name recognition than anybody going except for, you know, President Obama and maybe Mitt Romney. You know, as far as name,
I'm not convinced
but I think
her name recognition is better than the president isn't better than the president.
Her popularity may be better than the president. I'm talking about her name recognition.
Okay.
But the fact that she's, I mean, you got to figure that a lot of this, you know, a lot of these respondents that are Republican, they know her, but they hate her. They're the ones that tried to, you know, what was her term on the Today Show? The vast right-wing conspiracy. They're the people that are into that, if you will. So I just think that Georgia has trended in the past 3 months, according to this poll, faster Democratic than any point in the past decade. I mean, I would say if these numbers are good, and I have no reason to believe they're not, because you have the Harper polling poll that mirrors them from a Republican source, that in the past, since November – to mid-February, there's been more increase in Democratic performance in these polls than any three-month period I've seen. I mean, would y'all say that that's true?
You go first, Catherine. I'm thinking about this one.
Well, I think that's true, but I'm not sure that, you know, that these 3 months are indicative of what's going to happen in 2014. Mm-hmm. Or 2016.
Well, things can change, obviously, but it's still very interesting. Now, I do want to take a little bit of time to talk about the Harper polling poll. Now, Brock's numbers were higher undecideds, which I don't think that's a bad thing. If you just had a generic Republican, generic Democrat, it was 44-40, which just for generic people, no names, was still not bad, you know, for Democrats. And then you look at Governor Deal, approval, disapproval. There he was right side up, but he was still only 37% approved, 33% disapproval, 30% not sure. So I guess the way he's polling, he's getting more undecided, which, you know, you really want to, you know, tighten those in as polling goes on, but we're 2 years out. So I guess that's okay.
Well,
let's talk about one more number on Brock's poll, and that was he asked the question, I can't remember if we talked about this with him. I know we've talked about it so many times on the Cozy Vine. No women serve in a statewide elected office in Georgia. How much does this concern you? 34%, that was a plurality, said a lot. 33% said a little, and 33% said not at all. Kudos to him for including that question. Catherine, What do you think of that number or anything else in the Harper polling poll?
I haven't studied it as much as I studied the PPP poll, but I'm just going to talk about this not enough women serving.
Yes.
I think it's ridiculous to suggest that there aren't enough women serving because there clearly are not. I mean, across the board, there are not enough women serving. I mean, you can argue that there are some, because there are some, and some of them are in powerful positions, but they're still not enough. It's a minuscule percentage compared to the percentage of actual women voting. But I think it's going to be hard for us to elect a woman statewide in anything but education or Secretary of State for the next two cycles. I just don't think that Georgia is ready to do it. I'd love to try, and I am trying. You know, I'm working with a couple of different groups that are working on it, but I don't see it. I just don't see it happening. And if it does, it's going to be a Republican woman. But I don't think the Republicans want to elect women either.
Well, and they don't have any. Now that Karen Handel's no longer in elected office, they don't have a bench, really, to elect anybody from. So, and that's really the problem now. There's not much of a bench except for somebody going from state house up to the statewide office. And I think we're talking about a biggie, not just education or Secretary of State. Tim?
Yeah, I agree with the things that Catherine said. I don't think right now we're going to elect a female U.S. senator or, anything like that. Now, Congress might be another story. There's certainly talk about Karen Handel there, especially if one of the Metro Congress critters vacates their seat to run for the U.S. Senate. But right now, I just don't think the numbers are there. And, the elections are proving that. Now, the thing I thought that was so interesting in the Harper poll is the parity on the GOP side in this U.S. Senate race. Did y'all see that? It's like stepping stones. Brown, 19. Gingrich, 18. Price, 17. Kingston, 13. Does that mean it's anybody's game?
Yeah, it's wide open, and a lot of this is going to be, which area are you from? Can you lock down your area, and can you go into another area and steal votes? Or in these areas that their congressman doesn't run, can you go in and pick off more people than your opponents? So that's going to be important too, since it looks like no. Statewide officials going to run for it. It's going to be these congressional representatives.
And according to the Harper polling, he doesn't even hardly mention Cleland, because I don't believe Cleland's going to run either.
No.
Is Barra the guy? Or is he going to step out of his district to try this? And if he doesn't, who in the world could it be?
Well, I think there you're probably looking at a poll we're not going to be privy to the same way, and it's going to be what do things look like in an odd year, non-presidential year in his district, and what does it look like statewide? Because to me, if he has just as good a chance statewide, then he may want to go ahead and take that chance. And then also it'll be, how is the DSCC going to back him? I mean, if he has to, jump through flaming hoops just to get some decent funding, then he may not be that interested in it, considering he would get funding from the DCC, DCCC. And so that's going to be another thing he has to look at. But he would be a good statewide candidate for this seat, especially if he thinks, hey, they're going to take me out in my district because it's not going to be a favorable presidential cycle. So, I mean, why not take the risk if you're going to run, you know, go for the brass ring. So we can look for it. Well, since it's Oscar night and we're already in the second half of the show, I don't want to push it off any further, even though we got other topics to talk about. And two of the movies are political in nature, one being Lincoln that I'm sure everybody's somewhat familiar with just because it, you know, really got a lot of attention when it came out. The other one, not so much, because one, it doesn't have a very political title, if you will. It's called Argo. Ben Affleck, I guess, starred in it, but it was about the 1980 Iran hostage situation, and it involved President Carter's presidency, and I guess in the movie he felt it got too much credit for the American CIA when it was really some Canadian folks that really helped get the hostages out more, and he was willing to actually, I guess, defer credit in a way, but he thinks it should win Best Picture. Catherine, if you've seen Argo, I've only seen an extended preview and read about it. If you've seen it, you can talk about that movie. And, of course, Catherine, if you want to tell me why it should win or another movie should win, be my guest.
Well, I did see it. I think it's the only Oscar-nominated movie that I've seen this year, which is unusual. And it was very good. Very, very good. If you guys should see it. It's very, very well done. It's a movie. It's not a documentary. you know, it doesn't pretend to, you know, it's based on actual events, but they never said it was all factual. They do give quite a bit of a nod to the Canadian ambassador, who apparently was instrumental in making sure that this, I hate to say caper, but it was really kind of a caper, came off and that the people were rescued. Now, they did give a lot of credit to the CIA. You know, it's an American movie. It's about Americans. And I think that if you want to, you know, make a popular movie, it's probably going to be more popular if you don't say, well, this is a story about what the Canadians did for us. Though they do get credit. It is clearly acknowledged that the Canadians were very important in the whole process. Because they had to get fake passports. They had to get on the airplane. They had, you know, there was a lot of maneuvering that required participation from Canada. But I thought it was excellent. It's an excellent story. Very well directed. Very well acted. I think you'd really enjoy it. And I hope it wins tonight, though I haven't seen the other movies, so I can't say I'm, you know, pulling for it.
Yeah, Catherine, I guess I outdid you this year. I've seen both Life of Pi and Lincoln, so I've actually seen two, and I was quite shocked to hear that Ted and That's My Boy didn't get nominated either, but I guess that probably are the four movies I saw that are not kids' movies for the entire year. Tim, have you seen Argo, or what are your thoughts?
Yeah, well, I've done my usual. I always wait for the video of everything to come out. I'm not much of a theater goer, as it were. For one thing, there's no theater in this county.
Oh,
so I'd have to literally drive 25 miles just to go to a theater. And the last time I think I did that was when, Titanic was on. I got dragged to that one. But did you see where Nate Silver is actually weighing in on this? And
well,
he
has to do something now that it's not a presidential race.
Well, he's an odds maker. He can set odds on anything. I mean, that's what Nate Silver does, not just on politics. And he's really thinking that Argo is a heavy favorite and that Daniel Day-Lewis is a heavy favorite. So, you know, obviously he turned in the kind of performance you said he did for Lincoln. So that's what the betting action is on, and I'm going to go with it. I think he's kind of looking at how the insiders will vote, and that's who, you know, selects the Oscars. So, you know, it looks to me like Argo is the favorite tonight to win this thing.
Yeah, it's kind of, well, I guess, got buzzed towards the end, whereas, say, Lincoln, when it came out, started as the heavy favorite. And, you know, you can only, I guess, lose momentum from there. Catherine?
Yeah.
Well, you know, the thing about Daniel Day-Lewis is I think all actors in Hollywood and or around the world dread when he makes a movie because he's always nominated. I mean, it's sort of like, and, you know, he took that long hiatus and actually quit movies for a while and was, you know, making shoes in Florence. Seriously, he is a trained cobbler, really. I'm not kidding. And he lived in Florence, and then he was drawn back in. I think his first comeback was the movie about the streets of New York. I think he'd been quite a while since he'd made a movie at that point. So he's always a favorite. This will be his third. If he wins tonight, it'll be unprecedented. It'll be his third Oscar, and no one's ever won that many Best Actor Oscars.
Yeah, I do remember the year in which he beat Morgan Freeman, who actually had two movie roles that year. He played the fellow that was in the wheelbarrow with one leg, and then Morgan Freeman was in Glory and Driving Miss Daisy in the same year. And I thought that was quite an upset. Whereas this time, I think him winning wouldn't be so much because, I mean, he really did a great job.
Well, he did a great job in My Left Foot, too.
Yeah, he did. But I guess you think, hey, Morgan Freeman was in actually two movies instead of one, and they're both really powerful roles. So might have been a little different. Well, I guess with the Oscars, Catherine, is there any other political tie-ins other than Argo and Lincoln that we're missing?
Well, I think, isn't Zero Dark Thirty about...
you're correct. The killing of Osama bin Laden. Which I guess has political implications, even though I guess we want to say that's not overtly political. But it did have repercussions.
Yeah. Well, the campaign didn't get nominated.
The campaign did not. That is a shocker, I guess. But you see, honestly, I may have said this before on the show. I know I've said it somewhere. They honestly need a category for comedy. I mean, because comedies are very popular, and comedies get, you know, like zilch, zero respect at the Academy Awards. And there's something to be said for making people laugh. I mean, we could say, hey,
the best picture. They don't get zero.
What do they get? Okay, tell me how many awards are The Campaign, Ted, That's My Boy, name a few more, all up for combined. I bet it's like zero.
Well, but I think we're talking, I think they do reward good comedies. It's just that I think making a good comedy movie is very difficult anymore. I always mourn the loss of a good comedy. I mean, I haven't seen a good, you know, sophisticated comedy in ages.
Well, see, there's the key word, sophisticated. Sometimes you just have to check sophisticated at the door. When you just want to laugh, you just want to laugh. I mean,
right,
it's not...
but we're talking about sophisticated performances here.
Well, I mean, it would be its own thing. Just like animation, they give an award for animation, and that's where, like, say, kids' movies can actually win. Now, we're not going to try
they do that in the Golden Globes.
Wreck-It Ralph with Lincoln.
The Golden Globes do have, you know, a comedy and musical category and a drama category.
Well, that's good. I'm glad they do. Well, I mean, it's just a thought I have. Well, let's go on to another topic. And I saw this map, and I'm a big fan of the shape. So how the states got their shapes. Did I segue too fast, Catherine?
Oh, no, I love this. I love this map.
How the states got their shapes. And when you watch this show, they talk about all these different little things where, you know, a state got its shaped this way. And, of course, you know, there are people wanting to do a certain, you know, put the state together a certain way. And I'll tell you, honestly, after watching that show, they've missed some. Like, they don't have the state of Deseret, which would have been larger than Texas, and it would have been a Mormon state, if you will. you know, specifically Mormon, but that wasn't allowed. There's many other things. They actually have the state of Dade, Tim, close to you. I never knew there was a proposal for North and South Georgia. And, of course, there's some states like North Carolina and South Carolina that and Iowa that were always, you know, just seen as intact, if you will. Tim, when you looked at this map,
yeah,
what were some of the crazier things you saw?
Yeah, well, for, I had a hard time finding what would now be Montana. I mean, that was just a mess up there. I also noticed that Baja is a state. Well, you, as we know, Baja is part of, you know, the country of Mexico. But on this map, it would be a state of the United States. And the Northwest, look at that, guys. It is an absolute mess with little states here and there and the other place. Man, I'm glad none of that happened.
Cascadia would have taken up part of Washington and Oregon. And I guess that's where the Oregon border hits, because on this map, Oregon's so much smaller because part of Jefferson, which I haven't really heard about. Is in there. Tim, you're right. There's Baja California. There's also Sonora and Chihuahua. And, it, and those three states would all take in big swaths of Mexico. So I don't exactly know how that was supposed to work.
And what is that mess up there in Montana, if you're looking at it right now, Dave?
Chippewa and Montana and then part of Kootenai, which is part of Idaho and part of Montana. And there's one Dakota, but it doesn't appear to include any of what we call North Dakota. I mean, just some crazy stuff. And there's just these little dots all over the map where essentially a city or a county.
Yeah, I love those.
I
love all that stuff
in
the middle. You know, like St. Louis is its own state, and then in the middle of Missouri there's Callaway. And and then there's a couple of them. Franklin between North Carolina and Nickajack.
That actually almost became a state. I mean, of all these things, some of these proposals I'm sure are just almost jokes. But now the state of Franklin was very, very close to actually happening at one point. Oh, and Cuba's on here. Now, that's a little known.
Yeah, I thought that was interesting.
Too. Franklin Pierce, who was president too before Lincoln, he actually wanted to kind of take over Cuba and make that a state, and how that would have reshaped history is pretty interesting. But I mean, you look at it, it's actually closer to America than Hawaii or Puerto Rico are. So, you know, that's, I guess, a little known fact as well. I know at one point they had thought Texas would be divided into five states. And sure enough, if you look at, actually, it looks like on this map there's six states that are all part of Texas, but Cimarron, although Cimarron may actually be part of Oklahoma today. So a lot of different stuff here. Of course, the state of Dade. Tim, you may know that story since that's about a county away from you.
What's that?
The state of Dade.
The state of Dade. Well, you know what happened a lot in Georgia, and it might have been what the deal was with Franklin up there in Tennessee. A lot of these areas were Republican strongholds during the Civil War, and they refused to secede, like Ellijay, for instance. I'm surprised they haven't, because they actually called themselves the Free State of Ellijay during the Civil War. So I would imagine that has a lot to do with what went on in Dade, because in a lot of these mountain counties, for some reason, the people there did not want to secede. So
they
a lot of what you're – that's true. That's right. You're right. That's it.
Yeah, they just didn't own slaves. And actually on the Georgia Quarter, there's some iterations of the Georgia Quarter – that actually have the state of Dade clipped off, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
So that map is just so crazy. I mean, there's probably, you could do 10 different ones, because, of course, you have states like Georgia and even Connecticut, which they actually show West Connecticut on here, that used to go as far as the Pacific Ocean. So yeah, it's insane. Well, guys, we got about 11 minutes, and we probably have about 11 topics left. So it's hard to get to them all. But one that's, I guess, in some ways nationwide, even though it got brought to us from the Dayton, Ohio paper, was a lady from Ketterling who, Patricia Knuckle, and I'm not making that, or is it Knuckle or Kunkel? Because it's
I think it's Kunkel.
I believe it's Kunkel.
Instead of Knuckle, even the, yeah, Kunkel. She is claiming that she got fired for voting for President Obama. Now, we heard of a lot of places before the election where people said that, you know, if President Obama wins, then, you know, I'm going to fire people and all this, that, and the other. And this lady's actually saying that she was directly fired. Now, her being able to prove the case will be very important. But if she's able to prove this, this could be a pretty big precedent setter as far as can you be fired for political reasons if you don't agree politically with your bosses. I mean, obviously, it seems like you don't have a lot of freedom if you have to vote a certain way to keep employment and then make a paycheck and keep food on the table. Catherine, supposing this is true, how outraged are you by this?
Pretty outraged. I think this is directly against the First Amendment.
Yeah, it would seem so. Tim?
I mean, I can't imagine that it would win. I mean, if she can prove that this is the reason that I mean, I can't imagine that any court would approve that. Would not rule in her favor. I mean, it would be pretty chilling if they did.
Yeah, I mean, but you hear about the first election of William McKinley, that Marcus Hanna had his campaign manager, had all the, you know, factory bosses say, look, if Williams Jennings Bryan and his Free Silver wins, you might as well not show up for work. And they really believed that tens of thousands of voters changed based on that, and that cost Williams Jennings Bryan the election. Tim, your thoughts here.
Well, the company, of course, totally denies it and says, no, she was laid off for economic reasons. But the problem is, it's a well-known fact that the CEO of that company had said before the election that if the president won, that the first people that would be gotten rid of would be those who had voted for him. And so now that statement is hanging like a millstone around, you know, her
yep.
neck for saying
yeah.
that. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens in court. I'd be suing for more than $25,000, I tell you
me
that.
Me too.
If I truly believe that they fired me because of the way I voted in a presidential election.
Oh, yeah. Maybe, you know, the lady just wants to prove, you know, make the point, if you will. That could be what's going on there more so. Well, guys, I'm going to give Catherine a choice between topics for our next one. We can talk about Ashley Judd, or we can talk about Marco Rubio.
Oh, geez. I like to talk about both of them.
you did.
Let's go with Marco Rubio.
Okay.
Loser.
Well,
he's a loser.
Oh, okay. Well, and Nate Silver and Nate Cohn, the Nates, actually looked and said, is he really electable? Because it seems like when he beat Charlie Crist back for the U.S. Senate seat or the nomination at the point, people thought, oh, yeah, this guy's a real Tea Partier. He's real right wing. Well, it seems like since then he's done a pretty good PR job to move himself maybe to the middle of conservatism. I mean, let's be honest here. But when you look at his scores, that if you look at Republican nominees since 1960, only Barry Goldwater has had a more conservative rating as a senator than Marco Rubio. So the question is he too conservative to be electable? I guess since Catherine got to pick the topic, Tim, is he too conservative?
Possibly. He is very conservative. But on the other hand, he's got some things going for him. He's Hispanic, a member of the largest growing demographic group in the country. And the Republicans sorely need some Hispanic leadership on their side. He's also out there in front leading on the immigration issue, a very important issue right now. He's young. He's photogenic. He's got all of those things going for him. He's from a big state electorally. On the other hand, he might be, at present, too conservative to win a national election. But I tell you what, he's not too conservative to get that nomination. That he could do.
Yeah, I agree with you on the nomination part. And, of course, if they think, hey, we've got to diversify, then he may, get a little help there, if you will.
One more quick thing, and then we'll move up. He's more likely, I think, to run in 2020. So a lot could happen between now and then. So I just wanted to throw that in.
Yeah. Okay. Catherine, your thoughts on Marco Rubio's electability?
I don't think he's electable. And it's not just because he's so conservative, but I think that I think it's easy to paint all Latinos the same, but he's Cuban. Cubans tend to be more conservative in Florida,
but
they are not embraced by, it's not like every Latino is going to say, oh, I'm going to vote for the Latino. It's like, I'm not voting for the Cuban. That's my understanding.
Yeah.
I have a friend who's Cuban, who's from Florida, and we've talked about him, and he says he doesn't think that, the rest of the Latino population will embrace him like you might expect, partly because he is so conservative, partly because he's Cuban.
Guys,
I wanted
to ask y'all both this question. Here's that name again, Hillary Clinton.
Yep.
We've seen the polls. Does it really matter based on that polling who the Republicans run, if she runs?
That's a big point. I mean, it may not matter.
Does it,
so therefore,
Catherine,
that may be one reason why he decides not to run anyway.
Does it, Catherine?
I would say no, but, anything can happen in these races.
Yeah, that's
true. Anything can happen, and, depending on how mean they are and whether they, if they, their advantage would be if they ran someone young.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think age is going to be the thing. I mean, I don't think that she's too old to be president. I think she's thriving.
Mm-hmm.
She's very, youthful
mm-hmm.
for her age. But I think that would be if I was there, strategic person, that's what I would say. Find someone young.
Yeah, and David, I would say the big question, the only big question with her would be health. Now, what would you say?
We've thought about it. I mean, if everything the American electorate feels roughly like it does today, or even 3 months ago, because I think the American electorate is actually more pro-Democrat than it was 3 months ago,
Maybe.
And not just in Georgia, but everywhere. I think I think that she's in great shape. I mean, health will be her only issue. I think any strong Democratic nominee would start out as the front runner. Now, who that is a lot different. We have, three plus more years to discuss that as it is. Well, guys, I know we got to get out of here for the Oscars, and next week we'll have Representative Buzz Brockway to carry the water for his idea of repealing the 17th Amendment. Now he's got at least five other guys signing on to this thing. He'll be our guest, and we can probably cover what the half dozen topics we didn't even get to this week. Right, guys?
Right.
There we go.
Till then, good evening.
Good night, guys.
We are the heirs of that first revolution.
Will a strong and united America still be a force for freedom and prosperity around the world?
America has created the longest peacetime economic expansion in our history.
We are the heirs. heirs of that first revolution.
Good common sense and sound judgment of the American people and their essential love of justice.